Well, I'm also the second speaker, and I really enjoyed this session, so hopefully this will be another topic that you might find of interest. What I'm going to be talking about, what I'd like to call about the insights from sample human, you may not have heard these terms. Either you know what I'm going to say or you don't know. And so hopefully after my presentation will make more sense. What's called GWAS and epigenome EWAS. There's this way of looking at the whole DNA information in some interesting ways that you can start to make some information, start to discern some relationships. And so the first two slides is go parallels what I have in my abstract. And so the first thing the first chart is talking a little bit about GWAS, and then the second chart will talk a little bit about my EWAS. What I want to do is look at some sample results of what are the types of things you can start to discern and understand by looking at certain discrete points in our genome. And there's a way that they've done that is starting to show some interesting correlations. And I'll have some data that I've actually generated in other sources that are doing something similar, so hopefully that'll be of help and interest. So there's the genome, but then there's the epigenome. And an interesting thing that can happen is you can switch on and off gene function, which I think is phenomenally interesting. And the paper after me, I wonder if it may be one of the threads that will start to demonstrate out of in that regard. So one of the terms for a large category of what is in that gene switching is called methylation. So just a few thoughts there. They're showing these correlations. It's very difficult, but they are starting to see some areas where it is clear that those associations are present. And I think some of what Francis Collins was stating last night was giving you some more evidence on that front and that they're acting upon that. So in EWAS, the things that I want to start to focus on is that our environment can affect us, and it can even affect us at a gene level, that things can be turned on or turned off. So environmental factors. And I wanted to start to think about, okay, these are some things in the microbiology world. Well, what about our spiritual component? Does our faith, does other factors have a way that we can start to flesh that out by looking in this realm? That's one of the things I'm trying to do in my dissertation. And so this is showing some of the things that I'm pulling together to help me along that line. So I have two charts that, to me, it's been about a 10-year journey that I've been starting to look a little bit closer at the genes, at looking at DNA. I was just really profoundly impacted by that dense amount of coding information. At least that's how I like to think about it. I have an engineering background. And so I started to look at it from one layer at a time. And so I'm not a trained geneticist or biologist, so I'm thinking probably more from an engineering perspective and the information, and so bioinformatics, looking at it from that end. And so I was finding all these interesting layers upon layers of how this comes together. So there's the molecules that form into nucleotides. The nucleotides form the essence of the double helix that we have with DNA. And then an interesting thing that you could start to be looking at how that starts to lay out into codons, where you have three of those things grouped together, and there's different things that those things mean, and that different reading frames in terms of, by just that same information, if you're off by one reading frame, you could be talking about completely different things. And then finally, something that's called the standard codon table. Every organism uses the same coding mechanism, which I think is just really interesting. The fact that you can have information going in two different directions. I like to use an analogy as like you can play Beatles in one direction, is like you think in terms of a CD, and if you were to play it backwards, you're playing Beethoven. That's just mind-boggling to me with the programming I've done, that how could that be possible? To me, it's just indicative of a programmer that's so far beyond our computational ability is doing all that. And then now what I'm starting to think about is, well, if you start to look at the whole genome, the fact that these different things in different chromosomes can be coming together to show different functionality. And then that other layer, which I'll just allude to a little bit, is at an epigenome level, that you can turn things off in just certain discrete areas. And hopefully I will have clarity enough to explain what I'm trying to draw upon in that regard. So I like to think of the whole big picture of what I can, and my engineering background is tends to make me think that way. But when I look at biological life, it's like I'm experiencing, it's like an order of magnitude more complex, that it's almost impossible. And I think maybe that's part of the reality of things to sort of do that. But so the information I put on the last chart, I was trying to think, how do you kind of look at this? And the thing that I question is, and I don't have an answer for this, but I'm trying to think it through, is how can I be informed by my faith to better understand this holistically? Because I argue that God is in all these different levels of information, going from the physical world to the biological world to a complex functionality that we see in cells and in organisms. How did we actually get this information? I thought this was interesting, that I'm firmly convinced that God created our world to be discoverable, and so we can go to these different realms and get some interesting information. And so we've really had to do some interesting things to get more understanding of what's happening at the cellular, microbiology, the DNA level. And so literally you have to you destroy the DNA, and it's almost like you have a puzzle. You build those things together, finding where there's overlaps, and that's how you can come up with what we found with the human genome, and now we're taking that next step. So the first thing you have to do is you have to find out what are the basic building blocks. I like to argue how you spell our DNA. And then we do this more complex functionality. And that's why I got interest in looking at GWAS type of data. And the figure on the top is something that's called a Manhattan plot. If you were to think of New York City, you have the skyline and all the buildings, and that's what's inspired the name. And you'll see little peaks that are showing up that go up above this common level. That's an indicative of something that's showing that there seems to be a relationship that's starting to poke up with a particular population that you're analyzing. What they found is, you not looking at the whole 3 billion bits of information in the genome, look at what are these things where there's differences, and they're called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, where there's a variation. And so that's what I'm starting to suggest is an interesting area where a lot of work is being done, and I'm trying to contribute a little bit on that area. For some of you that you don't know, and I'm trying to get a little bit into the math, but not get into the math, but sort of give you an idea, is how do you figure out which one of those things are significant? The term that the literature uses is something called p-value. And what it means is that the probability that there is a relationship between this, you get a p-value that literally the smaller and smaller it is, it means it's less and less likely that there's not an association. And so it's one of the terms that's considered. And so these Manhattan plots is trying to show some areas where there seems like there's evidence that there's a strong relationship with the population that you're looking at. And this is one of the sources. The UK Biobank has done a lot of collecting of biological data and survey data about individuals and made that data available. So I'm starting to use that as a data source, and other authors are using this. And so this is an example. And also an area where I'm starting to have some interest is looking at alcohol dependency, alcohol consumption, drug and alcohol abuse, because it has an interesting thread of going into some practical trends, which I think might relate to the previous speaker and other things that we're talking about in this session. So they found a couple of correlations that they started to do some more deeper research, and if you would find that interesting, you could look up the paper. I have the reference there. So I'm going to talk about a few things, but in my dissertation, I'm focusing a little bit onto the alcohol realm, because I think there is a potential area where spirituality, faith, can have some impact there. So looking at the UK Biobank data, I'll show you in a couple slides some of the results that I've started to process. They had one category of looking at this population that had alcohol dependency and what they call the phenotype or the class, whatever you want to call it, that all of these people were self-reported as having alcohol dependency. So I explain what these plots are, this Manhattan plot, and what you're seeing is there are a few significant things that are high relative to others. And one of them is there seems to be a region that correlates to this alcohol consumption that I showed in a previous plot. I'm not going to go into detail here, but just start to make some observations about these plots. And if people are really excited, I have some backup charts that will go into a little bit more detail. But probably half of the audience is really into it, and the other half, they don't really know what I'm talking about. And so I'm trying to make this accessible, so hopefully some peer review will help me to know how far can you go into the kitchen without losing folks and keep everybody engaged. So this is just some of the, what I would say are key associations with alcohol dependencies for what I call these SNPs, what they call them in the literature. And another way that they look at it is, well, what is the ones that are further to the right, up at the top, those are the ones that are kind of extending way above the crowd, if you will. And you can see there are a few things that are high in that regard. One of my colleagues that I'm working with on this has made it clear that it is very useful. And this is so kind of cutting edge, at least as far as I know, that trying to do data comparisons and show that it correlates with different studies to validate, are you onto something, or is this just a statistical artifact that just happened for whatever reason in your data set? And so I'm trying to look at different data sets to compare these. And so this is a different study that looked at alcohol dependency. And I haven't done a detailed look at that comparison between different data sets, but that's one of the things that I would like to do. And one of the ways that can be significant is something that's called polygenic risk scores, that you can start to come up with a value and say, like, if you have this marker, that you have this SNP, that or these handful of SNPs that seem to be correlating to this type of condition, you could easily have an alcohol dependency or something of that sort. And so that's one of the things that I hope to go forward as I do some more research in this area. So that's kind of a little bit of an introduction to some of the things that's where I'm focusing on in the biology part of my dissertation. But I want to start to think about the epigenetic side, where this environmental factors come in. And so I have a few introductory charts, and then I'm going to show some things in terms of the literature that seem to indicate something that might be something that's showing that there are some interesting signs that our faith does make a difference. It's a very tall order to try and show that, but I'm hoping I can do something in a meaningful way. Once again, with my engineering background, thinking in terms of turning things on and off, that's one of the things that I found was kind of cool. So this methylation, having a switch. And so this is almost just like my scratch notes of thinking this through, of what this might mean. And so some of my thoughts here go anywhere from it seems to make sense to maybe a little bit more speculative. But it is interesting. In terms of another thing that I found in my research as I'm going through this, the fact that just because something is turned on or off, that doesn't mean it's globally all over your whole body. It could be something for a particular organ, a function of that one organ. And there are, as of what I got this information, there's 111 reference human epigenomes that are focused on different areas of our body. And so they can take samples for that or different things that would be directly related to that organ. I'm a little bit more interested in the neuroscience area, and I know Francis Collin mentioned that, and so I think there is an element even for things like alcohol dependency and such. So that's just another factoid for you. So I'm just going to mention three different things that I found in terms of the literature. These are scientific journals that are peer-reviewed, and starting to talk about these things where faith, religiosity is another term that's used, prayer, all of these factors that, taking it into a scientific setting to do studies, and they're finding that there is a correlation that things actually are improved as a result of these. It can be like a treatment that could be just as good, maybe that's a little bit strong word, but let's say like having different treatments that you would have in your regimen of trying to treat cancer, that these are things that are significant enough, if you're just thinking from a treatment point of view, that you really can't just throw them out. So this first one is showing the positive therapeutic effects of intercessory prayer in a coronary care unit population. And so the one thing I'll just point out to this quote is based on these data, there seems to be an effect, and that effect was presumed to be beneficial. So they're trying to qualify it, but prayer was fine. They were finding that when people were being prayed for, that there was a statistically noticeable change as a result of that. So I started to get interested in the fact of, well, what does prayer do in terms of things that might be helping in the medical area? So prayer process and the future of medicine, the author here said that physicians are discovering the importance of prayer, spirituality, and religious participation, enhancing physical and mental health, and responding to stressful life circumstances. And finally, in terms of religious coping, this article talked about religious and spiritual coping practices are associated with less frequent drinking, less heavy drinking among college students, and there is a positive relationship between students' use of religious coping strategies such as prayer and meditation and their parents' use of religious coping. So it's kind of alluding to the fact that there is prayer, their life is as a in a spiritual sense, and also an environmental, what they got from their parents. So there are various things that they're talking about. So if I haven't totally confused you, I'll go on to this next chart. But what I was just trying to show with those three quotes is I think there's some interesting things that are starting to come up in the literature that I think are profound. There's a variety of different studies out there that have shown what happens epigenetically. One study was when there was a lack of food during World War II, that there was a population that various women that were pregnant, that they had to go through that period of time of like on the order of 6 months, that when that occurred, it affected their pregnancy. And it actually affected the infants that grew up, and they were able to track those individuals. Well, here's another example in terms of a study that was done by a university in Sweden in terms of exercise and how it affect DNA expression in fat cells. They took a population of slightly overweight, healthy males and put them on an exercise program. And they measured their epigenome for these factors before and after, and they found that these switches were turned, you know, they changed. And so that the switching in gene function was something that they were able to measure. And that's a fact that it can go on. You know, these type of epigenetic switching can actually be passed on from generation to generation. So the positive influences that we have, that can be passed on. The negative influences, they can be passed on. And so I think it is a very interesting area for research and thinking about that more. So if I've accomplished my goals, hopefully maybe part of this is just motivational, that I think it's just amazing how we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And that was one of the quotes that Francis Collin and others have brought up, that I think it is a truism that we can think about in terms of our faith. Our bodies, what I see, are systems working together at various levels, and that there's multiple layers of complex functionality, which I think is elegant and just amazing. When even like the charts that I showed when I was trying to put that together, that's even still just a small number of, I think, of the overall types of things that we could start to look at. One builds on another, depends on another, the interdependencies, etc. So the more evidence, the more evidence that is found, in the more complexity that is uncovered. I see that in my assessment. So I've started to give a little bit of my thoughts in terms of the GWAS and EWAS data and what we can start to pull out there. Our bodies can adapt to various type of environmental factors, and I think also in terms of our spiritual activity. And so with working with my dissertation committee and also other colleagues that have been extremely kind with their time, I think I've got a methodology that I'd like to try and apply in my dissertation. And I'm really looking forward to see the kind of results that I can start to pull together. And if there's enough interest, I have a backup slide that'll kind of tease that a little bit. But I'd like to engage in a better world. I would rather have us all sit around and you could ask questions while I'm talking. But that's the main body of my chart, so I'll just turn it over to see if there's any questions.
I was a bit confused by your data on college students and alcohol consumption. And I think you were mentioning prayer and also being involved in a Christian community. Now, you have many factors there that can be both, I would say, positive and also negative or repressive. You could have students who are being prayed for, and they might be, say, in a free atmosphere, like a secular college or a public college, where nobody's got to put any pressure on them to drink or not, nobody's going to judge them. You could also have students, say, on a Christian campus where, you know, it beats the rules, you don't drink, so there's a strong social pressure not to drink. And you could also have a situation where
I think what you're pointing out is there's a lot of variables, and I kind of went through this very quickly, and I wasn't intended to trying to go into too much to detail, but that's exactly part of the point. And the one of the terms that I've heard that was actually in a data set that I'm hoping to get access to, that they created the term called religiosity, and they had a lot of specific levels of definition of what religiosity, and I think I have it in one of my references if you wanted to see my charts.
Yeah.
But how can you come up with an assessment of, like, is there a statistically significant difference? Well, one of the things they did in that particular data set is they had an extensive survey on all these different alcoholic drug abuse activities, their personal background, and their spirituality, to try and to make those types of distinctions. And so I kind of went through it very quickly, just trying to give you sort of a rough idea in general. So
yeah,
apologize.
I think you want to make sure that you divide up your sample into these different
right.
groups and different conditions.
Right now, what I'm focusing on is more on the biology, as well as like the UK Biobank study, as they had physicians actually part of the survey entering in the data for that information. And so I'm pretty confident in that data source, and I already have access to that, so that's where I'm starting. Depending on where, if I could design my own study, I would love to do that. I can't really do that in my dissertation, it would take too long. But if I could start to get a study that could start to bring in these questions so I could be more specific, I would really love to do that. Thank you.
I was wondering, in the differences between GWAS and EWAS studies, do you feel like there's a lot of complementarity between the types of hits that you get for each of them, or are there differences?
I haven't had a chance to actually dig into that, but you're kind of begging the question, so I'll go to this one chart in my backup. And this is when I'm kind of talked about my methodology a little bit. What I'm hoping to try and do is I did find one example so far of a in this UK biobank data where they first had this one where they had a list of people that never drank, and they found this high level, which, you know, there's only one or a small order of numbers that kind of get out of family. So that's actually good, because you can see that there's probably one or two that you can start to focus on. There was another category in terms of what they call former alcoholic, and you can still see that it has some significance. There was other things that are a little bit higher. But what could all of that mean in terms of the initial category was individuals that never drink, and part of it is that they would actually have a distaste for alcohol if you look at the gene that that's related to. So how would somebody that actually was a former drinker, but they have that high potential, did they actually have an epigenetic, a methylation that turned that off? And so my contention, that, and this is where, could have been something like they violated that, they drank, okay, and so they had alcoholic problems. But what could be an epigenetic event where they would have that methylation, where they would change it? Perhaps in a category, if I could to come up with something that would be statistically measurable, that they had like a spiritual event. And so that would be an example of what I would hope to try and do. I don't know if that answers your question, just brought up more things. But
this is a kind of a related question, but were you suggesting that there is a kind of a connection between being prayed for and life changes, like those two papers that you cited, and then that maybe epigenetics is the mechanism by which that would happen?
I probably just want to say at this point, this is me, I'm taking you into the kitchen and I'm doing my dissertation. I don't have it done. So these are areas of impression that I think are worth looking at closer. And if you would like to track that, you can contact me, but I'm in the process of evaluating that right now.
I guess my question is, how do you tease out cause and effect? So if someone has life changes, they would have epigenetic effects, as we don't know that their prayer is actually doing that. And I guess the next question is, well, what part of the body are you going to look for these epigenetic effects? What parts of the brain are we looking for? So it's kind of difficult to tease all this stuff out.
Well, like I said, there's more to follow. And I'm just, if you come back next year, maybe you'll hear me talk a little bit more and I'll have found something profound. But right now, I found some things that make me interested enough that I want to keep pursuing it, but I'm not done. So I think that to respect time, I have to move on to the next presenter. Thank you very much for the questions.